I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ, and archived on TVTimeMachine.com.
I don't reckon you fellas know who I am, but my name's Wayne Rogers.
Yep.
We think we got the makings of a real winner. Look at the producer. Look at the length of the show. 1 hour. Enough time to tell a good story. Yeah, there's even a dog.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to embark on a journey through a vast galaxy that traverses memory, generations, and popular culture. A magical trip through time as we meet the men and women of yesterday and today who have shaped not only what we see on TV, but the way we see ourselves. I'm Jim Benson. Join me, if you will, on an exploration of television's past, present, and future as we climb aboard the TV Time Machine. Our destination subject today will be the television and financial careers of Wayne Rogers. Mr. Rogers, author of Make Your Own Rules, A Renegade Guide to Unconventional Success, will join us to help navigate this particular excursion into the realm of media, business, and finance. We'll begin our exciting and fun-filled odyssey right after these brief messages.
I was born Mary Tyler Moore.
It's Jesse Donald Knotts.
Fred McFeely Rogers.
Leslie Moonves.
Isabel Sanford.
Leslie Renee Stahl.
Robert Edward Turner.
Regis Francis Philbin.
Aaron Spelling.
Since 1999, the Archive of American Television has been preserving the memories, knowledge, and insights of the men and women whose talents and vision have helped shape this remarkable medium. Over 500 video interviews with these TV legends are now available on the Archive of American Television website at metvlegends.org. There, you can sign up to receive news, updates, and also become a sponsor to help preserve television history for generations to come. That's metvlegends.org.
The mythological proportions of Star Trek provide something that's missing in people's consciousness, psyche.
The Archive of American Television, capturing television history, one voice at a time. Today on the TV Time Machine, we are proud to welcome an extraordinary individual in the fields of media, entrepreneurship, business and finance, Mr. Wayne Rogers. Probably best known to television viewers for playing Trapper John McIntyre for 3 seasons on the classic TV series MASH, those who have paid stricter attention soon realize the vast expanse of Mr. Rogers' talent, experience, and background. In addition to a remarkable 50-year career in television and movies, our guest has achieved extraordinary success as an entrepreneur, businessman, investor, pundit, and even Broadway producer. Over the next few segments, Wayne Rogers will not only help us explore virtually every aspect of his television career, but will also delve into his innovative and iconoclastic approach toward business and investing, featured in his new book written with Josh Young, Make Your Own Rules, A Renegade Guide to Unconventional Success. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to sell short, feel free to put in a market order as we slip from the restraints of the present and enter a rather lucrative past. Wayne, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
Jim, thank you very much for having me.
I understand, Wayne, that you were born in Birmingham, Alabama. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
What were your early years like growing up in Alabama?
Well, they were not untypical, I think. I was born out in the country, so I wasn't actually born in the city. So, you know, growing up, I did all of those kind of things that people do when they live in the country to a certain extent, and there was nothing unusual about my growing up. My dad died when I was a senior in high school, and I, in certain ways, I resent that that happened only because he was he was a Rhodes Scholar, and I never got the opportunity to pick his brain, as it were, because I was growing up all of that time, and not thinking about those things that would be intellectually interesting in later life.
How much of your dad do you think is in you?
Well, that's hard to say. I think a lot in many ways, but I think I probably was closer to my mother, naturally, because she was still around. So I think I probably have more of my mother in me than my father. But I think, once again, I think that's commonly true of girls seem to be closer to their fathers, boys seem to be closer to their mothers.
Now, when you were growing up, did you have a clear direction or goals for your life?
No. I had no idea what I wanted to do in life. In fact, that I didn't have any idea that I wanted to do in life until after I'd graduated from college.
Wow. In high school and in secondary school, were you a good student?
Well, I started off as a terrible student. I was making F's and D's, drinking beer, playing football, and chasing girls, and driving fast cars. That was not necessarily conducive to a an intellectual life. So, but about my junior year, I went to a little school in Tennessee called the Webb School, and my father had said if I didn't get myself straightened out, that's probably where I should go. He had a high regard for it, and it was during that time when he passed away, I went. That just sort of turned my life around. I ended up making all A's. I started out, though, in, being a D student. I ended up making all A's and won a scholarship to Princeton. So that's a pretty radical turn in a couple of years.
That's amazing. Now, what did you major in at Princeton?
I majored in history.
Very good. What brought you to history?
Denial of all of the other things. It was by default. I think I had a modicum of interest in history, maybe the reading of history, at that age, a choice. I still, as I said, I didn't even know what I wanted to do when I graduated. So I was fumbling around. I certainly was ill-equipped to be an engineer because I wasn't very good in math. I think history, I don't know what it was about history. I think there are a couple of things. There were a couple of professors at Princeton at that time who were kind of exciting guys and could make history exciting.
It seems to me lately, and especially doing TV Time Machine, which deals with a small slice of history, it just seems to me that history is not being emphasized or taught in the way it was when I was growing up, when you were growing up. Do you find that's the case?
We have a Sahara, if you will, of historical knowledge in the general public. George Santayana, the famous philosopher, said, those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it.
That's correct.
And if you don't learn from mistakes, and I see that all the time in the Congress, for example, a compendium of idiocy, if you will, in the sense that in the Financial Reform Act, they didn't bother to go back and, although they compared this, they said, this is a terrible thing, this recession, it's the worst recession since the Great Depression.
Right.
Well, if that were true, why didn't they go back and read what they did in the Great Depression?
Exactly. That's right.
I read the other day, I was looking at a GAO report, the General Office of Accounting, which is the watchdog on the spending of Congress.
Yes.
There are 82 redundant programs in the bureaucracy of various agencies, all these various, and they all are overlapping each other, so they have innumerable numbers of people working on the same thing over and over, and they don't communicate with each other.
Well, ultimately, when something becomes that big, doesn't it just grind to a halt? Could we look forward to that?
We debated a lot, as you know, during the last couple of years, the phrase, too big to fail.
Right.
Meaning that the taxpayers would pay for it if it were too big. Too big is, maybe too big to fail is too big to exist. We've got a proactive federal bureaucracy which is totally out of touch with historical perspective, and is it perpetuates itself. And as a consequence, it's a nightmare for the private sector to try to navigate this. And only if you are big, quote, can you do that. So we are headed, this is going to sound, and I don't mean it to sound this way because it has political implications, but I mean this in a purely economic sense. We are headed towards a fascist economy. What do I mean by that? I'm defining that as an economy that consists of big government, big corporations, and big labor unions, so that big becomes the mantra to run the society. We know that's disastrous, and yet we continue to do it.
Now, speaking of big institutions, as a young man, you were in the Navy.
Yes.
What were your duties in the Navy?
Well, I was a navigator on an old cargo ship, and the ship was like the play Mr. Roberts, very much like that, and I loved it. I loved my time in the service. A lot of kids at that point in time, this was during the Korean War, not the Vietnamese War, but a lot of people at that time were saying, I don't want to go into the military. And I decided early on, if I had that attitude, it would be time out of my life. I wanted it to be time in my life. I wanted to take advantage of that. I wanted to learn everything I could. And going in the service that way, I enjoyed it. I loved it. I have tell a story in the book, in my book, Make Your Own Rules, about taking apart a sextant and putting it back together.
And taught yourself.
What's that?
You taught yourself to take the sextant apart and put it back
yes,
together.
Yes, but there's a reason for that. Not because I'm any different from anybody else, except that I'm curious. I'm constantly, my mind is one of those minds that I can't get over. That's why in this book that I talk about and Make Your Own Rules, I describe all these various businesses I've been in that I'd never had an experience factor in. Why? Because it fascinated me. I wanted to learn it.
Now, how did you go from the Navy to acting?
Well, the ship I was on, which was an old cargo ship, as I said, but we went into the Brooklyn Navy Yard to get the barnacles scraped off the bottom and have the ship repainted. And I had a friend who was a director in the theater, and I called him up and said, can we have dinner? And he said, I can't because I'm in rehearsal. I'm rehearsing a play. He said, but if you want to come over and watch the rehearsal and wait till about 9 o'clock and get a bite with me then, I'll be happy to do it. And that's what I did. And I sat there and watched that rehearsal, and that's what did it for me. That's what got me hooked.
Now, your first primetime series role was on the 1960 TV Western Stagecoach West. Now, you played the role of stagecoach driver Luke Perry. Now, in the following clip, Luke helps a damsel in distress who's just been assaulted by a brutal bandit.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your help.
You want to tell me about it?
Well, I don't know who you are.
I don't know who you are either. I just thought I'd ask. Anyway, I got the room next door. If he comes back, knock on the wall.
Wait a minute. Mr.
Luke Perry.
Ruby. Ruby Walker.
It's a pleasure, Ruby.
How about a drink?
I'd like that.
Wayne, what was your experience on Stagecoach West?
Well, I'm sitting here trying to remember what that was about. You know? It's a little startling. I think that was, what year is that?
1960.
And 1960. Here we are. This is.
That was your first starring TV series role.
Yeah, wow.
And the Stagecoach West was on ABC, and it ran one season, 39 episodes.
Yes, in those days we made 39 instead of today they make 22. They used to make 39 and rerun 13. I think they do 22 and 22 now.
Crazy?
Did around 22 and 30 or whatever it is that they fill in. But and in those days, everybody was making Westerns. Westerns were very popular. You know, they were the first things that came out of the movies that translated to television very well. You had Gunsmoke, which ran for, I don't know how many years, you know, with Jim Arcus.
20.
Have 20 years?
Yeah, from 55 to 75.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have Gun, Will Travel with Dick Boone, you know, and all of these various Westerns that were on the air. And I just, and when I went out to Hollywood, they cast me in this, you know, that particular series, and everybody was doing Westerns in those days, so I didn't think anything on her. I remember once when I was in New York, they were casting for Maverick, that Jim Garner later did, as you know.
Right.
And the guy from the studio was there, and my agent was with him. He was telling the guy from Warner Brothers, you know, that I was acting in this these Russian short stories. And finally, the guy got sort of fed up with it, and he said to my agent, "Look," he said, "kid, I don't want to get out of line here, but I don't care what, you know, what you're doing here in New York." He said, "All I want to know is, what do you look like, and can you ride a horse?" And that was the essence. That was my introduction to Hollywood. The startling idea that they don't care about the acting at all. Just, are you handsome and can you ride a horse, as it were, you know. Obviously, I wasn't handsome, so, and that's why they got Jim Garner,
right,
you know, who was not only a good-looking guy, but a good actor.
How did Stagecoach West affect your life, both personally and professionally?
Well, it didn't affect my life that much in the following sense. You know, in the early, I say early, in those days, I don't remember what I was making, but I felt lucky as hell to be making anything. You know, I'd worked in off-Broadway plays making $40 a week and, you know, lived in a $30 a month walk-up cold water apartment in New York. So starting out, you're lucky to get anything. So it didn't change a lot of what I was doing in that sense. I was still, after that, acted in a lot of television shows and movies, and also came back to the theater. You know, I think over the years I've probably done 300 or 400 movies, televisions, and plays and different, you know, things.
Well, Wayne, we're going to have to take a little break from our fascinating journey, but never fear. I'll be back in a lightning flash with actor and businessman extraordinaire Wayne Rogers, author of the book Make Your Own Rules, A Renegade Guide to Unconventional Success, who is traveling with us on the TV Time Machine.